Welcome in. It's Mac and Cube in the morning. The first Thursday of the college football season is officially in the books, and what a Thursday it was. Pretty amazing, actually, just how compelling some of those matchups were. Of course, we'd start with the number four team in college football. That would be the Ohio State Buckeyes, fending off what was a really impressive effort from the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Now, when you look at Minnesota, this is a team that last year at no point resembled the magic that they had 2 years ago. I mean, absolutely no point where they resembled the magic. However, last night's Minnesota team looked a whole heck of a lot closer to the 2019 version than what we saw at any point in 2020. Man, I was impressed. Now, for every level of being impressed, I must also include the fact that there are clearly some vulnerabilities with Ohio State. Ohio State against the run, not so great. Ohio State's lull really starting in the mid-second quarter, when Minnesota converted on that 4th-and-2 from their own 27-yard line, Ohio State went into sleepwalk mode, and we didn't see the real Ohio State really until the third quarter. I mean, you can't take lulls like that against super elite teams. Can't happen. I thought Tanner Morgan played admirably for Minnesota, was bailed out on what was a questionable roughing the passer call. I thought it was the correct call by the letter of the law. But, man, even as a quarterback, I look at that and I'm like, man, come on.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
So he was bailed out of that one. But because he was bailed out of that one, D, I would say it was actually a pretty solid performance. I think Ohio State's secondary is improved, a little bit more physical than they were a year ago. You could clearly tell some of the young players they have back there in the rotation were told, man, rough them up. Let's see what happens. Let the ref call it. Who cares? Because it felt like
it got a little it was a physical.
It was extremely physical, but it was good to see. That's how I'd like to see it, personally. Make the wide receivers earn it.
Let them boys play.
Let them go. I thought the Minnesota receivers, what was a position that was somewhat questionable coming into the game, both Daniel Jackson and Dalen Wright being the transfer from Texas A&M, those guys gave that Ohio State secondary some fits. Daniel Jackson had an opportunity on a couple different occasions. One, he drew a pass interference. Dude was at the gate. Get that ball up and down. It's a touchdown. Drew a pass interference, ended up scoring a little later. But for all intents and purposes, the challenge that Minnesota put forth last night was very impressive. The most impressive part of Minnesota's performance was Muhammad Ibrahim. Now, I really hope this young man's okay. He left in a walking boot on his left leg. For those that saw the replay, it didn't look good. I am not a doctor, but I don't feel like the calf is supposed to suddenly send a shockwave as if there was a popping mechanism there on the back of his calf. I'm praying for him. I'm thinking about him because that young man can play some freaking football, Damian.
He's a dog.
He's quick. He's physical. He can get through the hole. He presses the hole. Man, I was so impressed with him. And if he doesn't go down, maybe the outcome's a little different. I still thought Trayson Potts was okay, who came in relief. But Ibrahim, that team that Minnesota ran out there with him at running back is a different team than that Minnesota team without him at running back. Back to Ohio State, though, because ultimately that's where we need to kind of spin the conversation. Minnesota is Minnesota is Minnesota. Can they win the Big Ten West? Sure. Absolutely. Does it matter? Probably not. In their house, first time the fans have been back there in 2 years, Ohio State goes into the most chaotic environment Minnesota can possibly create. They have a redshirt freshman quarterback that had never thrown a college pass, and yet he was able to weather the storm. Ohio State was able to weather the storm. They come out on top 45-31. Is Ohio State, based on what I saw last night, a national championship contender? Is it fair to say no?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They got some things to shore up on the defensive side, because if there's one thing I know, it's that Ohio State is talented, very, very talented, but they have some holes. The run defense last night and the tackling was disappointing. Hopefully that will resolve itself. I thought the secondary play, there were a lot of plays left on the field by Minnesota. I thought there were a couple different occurrences. You drop it in the bucket, a little better deep ball, and Ohio State is really, really in a tough spot. But little weather in the air, little dicey in the air, and as a result, those deep balls fell incomplete. And next thing you know, Ohio State has a pretty decent-sized lead. I think Ohio State's quarterback's going to be great. Now, you're going to sit there and say, well, how can you – what are you talking about? Did you watch him last night? I was like, yes, yes. I especially saw that string of incompletions after he started 3 or 4 for 4, and then he had a string of incompletions that were not great. Had the drop on the deep ball down the right sideline, or I guess right middle, top of the numbers to the right. Beautiful throw. A little deep. Would like to have seen just a touch more air. But part of the reason why I think he's going to be great is because of that struggle. Wait. Hang on, Greg. Walk me through that. That dude faced some serious adversity last night. Adversity that cannot be created on the practice field. Real adversity, where he was getting hit, where he was a little erratic with the throws, where he, maybe his protection wasn't unbelievably good all the time. And how did he play in the second half?
Lights out.
Lights out. Lights out. That's the making of what could become the next great Ohio State quarterback. Because I don't care what, when things are going right, everyone's good. I want to see you when things are going bad. How do you respond? Because that second quarter from Ohio State was scary bad. Scary bad. They go in at halftime. They collect themselves. First drive. Boom! Right down the field. Touchdown. Next drive. Boom! Right down the field. Touchdown. Big play. Touchdown. Create a matchup in the slot. Get a big post off play action. Heavy play action. Boom. Right on the money. And it's not like receivers were having to make crazy adjustments on these throws either. Those suckers were in stride. That kid's going to be good, man. I'm not saying he wins the Heisman or anything. I'm not saying that. And there were a lot of wide open guys last night. A lot of wide open guys. He's going to be pretty good. A lot of really good running backs on the roster too, so we can revisit what Ohio State was last night. But for the moment, en route to Gainesville, Florida, he is the co-host here of Mac and Cube in the Morning. He is Cole Kublik. Cole, how are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well. I just bumped into some guy named Jordan Rogers in the airport in Atlanta. So,
who?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who that guy is. So
I thought he flew private.
Right.
But
no comment.
I guess he's one of us after all. when you were on the sideline last night, and we have not gotten to this game yet, you don't have a ton of time, but you'll catch us here in about an hour and a half when we get back to business talking about the games that are coming up tonight and tomorrow. When you were on the sideline last night, what were your first impressions of what Tennessee did against Bowling Green?
I think offensively, I felt pretty good about it. You knew what it was going to look like. Obviously, had studied UCF, studied Josh, and what they were going to bring to the table. And then talking to the coaches, you had a pretty good idea what they were going to be. Physically, I thought Joe Milton lived up to everything that I kind of thought that he was going to be. I mean, you get out there and you see him on the field. He just, in stature, he's a lot bigger than you think he is. And then you see the arm strength up close and personal, able to just – understand what that level of talent is while he's out there throwing the football around. But the inconsistency was frustrating, Greg. You know, I felt like, and I think you're going to get that with him just because he's not a great passer right now. He's a big time thrower, but he's just not a great passer yet. Maybe that comes, not really sure. Thought they would implement a few more quarterback runs early on to sort of loosen up the defense. Then the run game gets going, and I felt like late in the second quarter that Tennessee, you know, Golish and Heupel kind of went away from it a little bit, and that's why I really think the offense started slowing down and the inconsistencies began to come. But I'll tell you this too, man. I'll give Scott Leffler some credit. They altered their plan a little bit, and they found some success, found a way to protect the quarterback, knew they were going to cover one, found some man beaters, and the offensive line began to hold up a little bit, went more pin and pull instead of zone stuff in the run game. And next thing you know, they're moving the ball a little bit, kick a couple field goals, and got a decent game at halftime. So all in all, I felt like the opportunity that offense is going to bring, which we've known, you definitely got a chance to see that, understand what that's going to be. You got to see the talent level of Joe Milton. I think the offensive line can be more than serviceable, and I think that some of the receivers are going to be able to play. Best receiver wasn't even going last night for Tennessee. So still hard to gauge because, as we know, Bowling Green's not a good football team. But you do what you're supposed to do offensively. You handle your business. You get a nice win. So it's got to be a pretty good confidence boost for a lot of those kids that have been through a lot the last 7-8 months.
I thought the defense flew around pretty good. Now, in full disclosure, I did not watch, you know, all four quarters of the game. But Bowling Green could do absolutely nothing offensively until they hit that wheel route down the right sideline on third down. They had done nothing up to that point. So how would you gauge the defense's progress? Because I know the coaching staff was pretty bullish on what that group could potentially be.
I thought the effort was fine. I thought Jeremy Banks and the linebackers looked good, super active, like you said, played hard. Heupel told me that after the game. He said, listen, I asked him, I said, what's the one thing that you know you're going to like when you put this film on? Because he had already addressed the fact that, listen, a lot of things to correct, a lot of things didn't go our way. And he said effort. He said, especially defensively, the way those guys came downhill and played. I thought safety position came up, played the run extremely well. I thought the linebackers were active sideline to sideline. They just don't really have a disruptor up front. And, you know, he saw the USC transfer make a couple plays, but he's not beating a bunch of SEC tackles with inside moves like that. He's going to have to be more of an interior defensive lineman. And I wonder about how good they can be up front. They said they like their depth, but I don't know how many guys are going to be able to just win one-on-ones by themselves or cause problems off on their own. So that, to me, a little bit concerning, but the effort you had to be pleased with. And I do think that they simplified things. You know, that was something that staff told us. Listen, we don't want these guys going out there not knowing what to do, not knowing where to be, where to go. And I think that's probably a little bit of coming off last year. You know, like I do, Jeremy's defense is fairly complex. A lot of checks, a lot of calls, a lot of different alignments. And now they're probably going out there saying, listen, let's just line up, play fast, see if we can cause some problems. And with everything Tennessee lost, to be able to, you know, show up and do some good things last night, I think you have to come away from that, please.
Yeah, I would say all of that is very fair, buddy. We know you have a flight to catch. Have a safe trip down to Gainesville. We'll talk to you in about 1 hour and 27 minutes, if that works for you.
You're not going to let me tell you about my guys at Royal?
Oh, please, yeah, if you don't mind. That'd be wonderful.
Just trying to do a job.
You guys understand. Royal Buick GMC right there off 65, where it meets 31 in Vestavia, royalautomotive.net. If you're in the market for a new SUV, Yukon, Denali, Sierras, they're rolling in weekly. And obviously, the used cars right there at Royal, second to none. Prices have gone down recently, so if you want to go check those out, obviously going to be able to save a lot of cash on a used car. And the selection, due to multiple dealerships, all right there at the same place, right off 65 where it meets 31 in Vestavia, you're going to be able to have the best selection in the state of Alabama. So go check them out online, royalautomotive.net. And anxious to hear your thoughts later in the show about how scary that game was for Ohio State last night, a team that you said was going to win by 50.
Ooh.
50.
Ooh.
Okay. That sounds about right. 50, well, if you're actually listening to the show, which I feel fairly confident that you do on a daily basis, not entirely confident, but fairly confident, you would know that I felt good about Ohio State last night. I thought it'd be tough. I thought they'd win more convincingly, and if it not for a couple of mistakes, it could have very easily gone sideways. They were by far the more talented team. They do have some things to clean up, though, especially on the defensive side.
No, and I tell you, there were some things to really be excited about. I mean, you see, obviously, the arm talent of Stroud, some of the throws he's able to make, very impressive. Those younger backs are, it's kind of going to be, you know, an Alabama situation, I think. It won't be long before Master Teague getting a very limited amount of touches in that offense due to what's behind him. Receivers can go, and I feel like the offensive line overachieved a little bit. They exceeded my expectations. Both guards played pretty good ball. They finished extremely well. There was good effort for most of the game. Still a little bit inconsistent. Right tackle's got some problems in pass pro, but I can see where towards the end of the season we'll be talking about them in the same breath as, you know, Georgia, Clemson, A&M, Alabama, Oklahoma, possibly.
I think for being week one, I would say it was a B-plus performance. You know, I think that offensively, yeah, you had a little lull there in the second quarter, but for the most part, man, there's a lot of things that you can walk out of there saying, hey, man, we just beat a conference opponent on the road in a place that's difficult to play. We got their best shot, and that's a team that might win 8 or 9 this year, and we beat them by a couple touchdowns, and it could have been more. You know, I think that's where you stand.
It's a good team on the road. It's a good team on the road. You saw the size and physicality of that Minnesota offensive line. I think we talked about him. Damien talked about him. You and I both. We had gone and watched him. What Ibrahim was as a running back in that offense. And I mean, he proved it last night. Tough to see him go down with that injury late in the game. And Tanner Morgan showed you why he's such a good quarterback. I don't know if he has a lot of perimeter weapons. That's probably what held him back. I thought the offensive sets were a little bit too compressed for a lot of the game, but you know, they made it go for a little while and unfortunately turned it over. Bad deal. And they hung with them. So I think Minnesota's maybe a pretty good football team and obviously had to go on the road week one. So I'm a little less down on the Buckeyes as I was going into that game.
Yeah, well, make sure you do me a favor. And if you love the trenches, go and check out the play. It's fairly early in the game. Minnesota goes for a wildcat on 3rd and 2, and I want you to go see what number 9 for Ohio State did to the tackle or the extra tackle, number 70. Watch that. It should be illegal in 49 states. It is unbelievable, and as an offensive line guru and protector, it's not one that you're going to want to see, but I need you to see it. I want to get your reaction on Twitter a little bit later. Sound good, my friend?
I'm gonna go check that one again. Yeah, I'll get on the tape right now.
Yeah, you need to do that. It is 5:21 remaining in the first quarter, so you'll be able to find it rather quickly. It should be play number 16 for Minnesota, roughly. So enjoy that one, and take that, put that in your O-line bowl, and smoke it, my friend. All right, appreciate you, my friend.
Goodness gracious.
have a good, safe flight. We'll talk to you in an hour 20 as we preview the weekend here on Mac and Cube in the morning. Cole Kublik, of course, joining us on the Michelob Ultra Hotline, a superior light beer with low calories, low carbs, and zero fat. Live life to the ultra. John Parker Wilson coming up here in about 12 minutes. We got Chris the Bear Felica coming up in 42. Want to get back quickly to some of the games from last night. Of course, Ohio State victorious was not exactly the best performance for the Buckeyes. What concerns me and what will keep me up at night if I'm Ryan Day here in the weeks to come. And then there was another game. Got a little bit of a later start, but it's one that certainly has its fair share of impact on those listening to the show. Maybe a former coach involved, and it might have gone by the way, and you didn't probably see it, because if you stayed up, you went to bed before midnight, you missed it. It might have gone in the direction of that former coach after what was a very disappointing start. We'll tell you what happened in UCF Boise State next on Mac and Cube in the Morning. Welcome back to Mac and Cube in the Morning. Greg McElroy here. Appreciate you guys being with us. Cole Kublik en route to Gainesville after his game last night in Knoxville. He'll be with us again here about an hour and 15 minutes from now as we preview the weekend slate. Looking forward to breaking down some of those games. I did the numbers earlier today. First thing I thought about when I woke up was, man, how much more do we have to look forward to this weekend? And in case you're wondering, we have 8 more games involving FBS teams. We have 2 conference games, and we have a top 10 team on the road just tonight. That's before we even get to Saturday and Sunday and Monday. All days, by the way, featuring college football action. So it's wall-to-wall here this Labor Day weekend, and we look forward to spending it with you. We'll be back on Monday, too, laboring on Labor Day to get you prepared for Ole Miss and Louisville and help kind of put a bow on the first weekend of college football. We will get to UCF and Boise State here in just a minute, because that was one heck of a wild ending, and I would imagine that most of you that are driving to work or that are awake right now probably missed the end of it. It was a late night after a lengthy weather delay. Speaking of delays, I'll tell you what I'm not willing to take a delay on anymore, and that's getting my dental care taken care of. Because I was tired of waiting weeks for dental care because I need it on my schedule. And, you know, the worst thing is when you have a dental emergency, you can't get immediate help. I'm here to tell you about Family Care Dental, the urgent care office where you can be seen the same day. They have three locations in Hoover, Fultondale, and Homewood, and they're accepting patients of all ages for emergencies or routine dental appointments. Most insurance plans are accepted, and they can see you on Fridays and Saturdays. Family Care Dental, 874-9605. That's 874-9605. Let's go to the Michelob Ultra Hotline, superior light beer with low calories, low carbs, and zero fat, and talk to our dear friend John Parker Wilson, who, of course, is always brought to us by our very good friends at Craneworks.
The big dog's got it.
John Parker Wilson, brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it. The big dog's got it. And now, John Parker Wilson.
John Parker, we finally made it, my friend. Weeks of speculation, weeks of buildup, and it's here. We are officially in week one of the college football season, a little more than 24 hours away from the kickoff of Alabama and Miami. As we've approached it and we've gotten very close, has your feelings changed, or have your feelings changed, nice sentence, about what we should see from Bryce Young tomorrow in his first college start?
No, I don't think so. I think as we get closer to the game, I think you know, we're just kind of going off mostly what we hear coming from the building, and I think there's a lot of excitement for Bryce Young. I think he's done everything that he was supposed to do up to this point, whether it was last year backing up Mac Jones or doing the right things in spring practice or coming out and having a really, really solid fall camp. So I think more than anything, I'm excited to see Bryce Young get started, see what he could do, see what these guys around him could do, because they have been working hard. There's been a lot going on, you know, a lot of new faces on offense. So it's not just Bryce. There's a lot of people that we're going to be looking to see what this 2021 season is going to be like.
Yeah, and I'm really interested. I mean, last night was a good example, right? C.J. Stroud, surrounded by a really talented group, he had his fair share of struggles in the second quarter, more specifically. Now, three out of the four quarters were great, but he had that one quarter in which things weren't going real well, and he responded beautifully. And if I could draw up the perfect scenario, now Alabama fans might not believe this, I'd like to get your take. If I could draw up the perfect scenario for Bryce's maturation process, is that everything can't go perfectly tomorrow. There needs to be at some point, whether it's early, late, there at some point needs to be a little adversity so we can see how he responds. And I think that would do him a world of good, because it's only going to get tougher from here. You go to Florida, you go to Texas A&M, of course LSU, the Iron Bowl, potentially Georgia in the SEC championship game, a playoff game, you what have it. If I can create a little adversity tomorrow, it's not the worst thing in the world. So how, if you could drop the perfect script for his first outing as a starter, what would it be?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think going out there and, you know, as successful as he was in high school, there's still a lot of unknowns for him just mentally. Like, going out there on the sidelines, hey, how am I going to do this? How am I going to handle it? Whether it's fourth down or fourth quarter or whatever. And having adversity is the biggest teaching moment you could possibly have. I mean, I think just about every press conference that Coach Saban has, he's talking about our guys going out there and handling the unexpected, handling adversity, because that's how you learn. That's how you teach people. That's how you teach yourself, too. So when you do have third down and goal against LSU and you've got to score a touchdown to win the game, you've been there before, you trust yourself. I think more importantly, the guys around you trust you. So it's just part of the process, and you do want to kind of see the adversity. Earlier is better than you know, when we go on the road against Gainesville, because it's just, it's part of growing up. It's part of playing football. And, I know Bryce is going to handle it, but you just got to go out there and, I think teach yourself more than anything that you can handle it.
When you think about the other weapons at his disposal, last night, for instance, good example. I mean, we knew that Ohio State had great players, but we didn't know as much about the freshman backs. We didn't know about how the offensive line would gel. And sure enough, a couple guys break out. The freshman backs, the young backs, being the best example of that. Who's poised for a breakout tomorrow that we aren't talking about right now and we should be?
Well, you know, I think besides Bryce, I think, you know, you look at Brian Robinson being the fifth-year senior running back, so there's going to be a back behind him to emerge. Trey Sanders, Jace McClellan, Roy Dell Williams, one of those guys, I think, has got to step up. The team needs him to step up, but it's going to separate themselves as being, you know, the kind of go-to running back behind Brian Robinson. And then at receiver, I think that is the biggest thing. We have to have people step up. We got John Metchie, Baker's coming back, Williams is transferred from Ohio State. You know, he's played in the past, but unknown for us. And I think who's going to replace the slot guy? We have Slade Bolden. We've heard JoJo Earl's had a great camp. Ajay Hall kind of split out wide receiver. So this has been a Alabama offense of receiver by committee and having multiple receivers that are game-changing guys that can go up and make plays. And I think with Bill O'Brien coming in and picking up with Steve Sarkisian done, we've got to have not just one receiver step up. We really need four go-to guys in the outside to keep this offense going. So we need somebody besides Metchie to emerge as here's going to be our first four rotations at wide receiver.
Lots been made about Jahlil Billingsley and him not necessarily being – let's just call it what it is. He's in the doghouse right now. I mean, I don't know how else to spin it. What can we expect from his contributions tomorrow? Is he going to be relied upon, or is it kind of a wait and see?
I don't know. That doghouse is a tough place, as Coach Saban, isn't it?
Yeah. I got to be honest. I've never been in that doghouse. Like, you know, that's like I've thrown a bad pass and like been yelled at, but like the real doghouse. No, that's one that I have not experienced. I don't think you have either. So no. I can't say that we can give plenty of experience playing for Coach. That's not one that I want to be able to give.
Yeah, thank God, I'm with you. So he's in the doghouse. We all know it. I think the only way to work out of the doghouse is not it's being productive on the field if and when you get your time. Getting out of the doghouse is doing what you're supposed to do Sunday through, you know, Saturday right before kickoff, and going to class, being in meetings, you know, being accountable to your teammates. I think that's the biggest thing is, can he trust you? Can we go out there if the game's on the line? Do we trust that you're going to know what you're supposed to be doing? Have you done the right things all week to show us that you can do that? So I don't know what to expect from him tomorrow. I think this team needs him. I think our offense needs him. I think he makes us a much better offense, especially when you see how, you know, athletic he's been in the past. I hope he plays a lot, because I think just like Bryce needed to handle adversity, Billingsley of last year not playing a ton early on, kind of emerging into this playmaker guy. Okay, if we're going to feature him this year on offense, we got to trust him, and he's got to be able to go out there and play. So the more snaps he can get before we go on the road to Gainesville, before LSU comes into town, before we go play Auburn, it's going to make him better. It's going to make Bryce Young better, because right now, you know, besides him, Latu's played a little bit at wide receiver, at tight end, had a good spring game, had a really good fall camp, but still improving too. So, you know, quarterbacks like those tight ends. They can use their body, can box out, just be an easy check down or easy in the quick game. So I'm excited to see what Billingsley can do, but I don't know if he has earned that right to be out there and, you know, be the starter and play 50 snaps.
Yeah, excellent stuff, JP. We can't tell you how much we appreciate the time. As always, thanks to you and our wonderful friends at Craneworks.
And Craneworks, with offices in Birmingham, Mobile, and Nashville, Craneworks is the Southeast leader for crane and equipment rental. Give the big dog a call for your next lift, machinery moving, or rigging project. And don't forget, the Rental Works division is ready to serve you with a full line of rental equipment for jobs, both big and small. And they always offer those qualified operators for all their equipment, including aerial and earth moving equipment. So check them out at craneworks.com.
All right, awesome stuff. JP, we'll talk to you next week, man. Thanks again.
See you, Greg.
All right, John Parker Wilson joining us here, former Alabama quarterback, now voice of the Crimson Tide alongside the actual voice of the Crimson Tide, Eli Cold. John Parker. See, to me, like, as a color guy, like, I consider myself as much the voice as the play-by-play guy.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
I feel like that's fair. I mean, if I call John Parker Wilson the voice of the Crimson Tide, I feel like that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah, it is.
Right? I mean, it's a 50-50 game, right?
Absolutely.
A little give and take. Come on. No, I love it. Good stuff. Look forward to listening to him and Eli tomorrow afternoon. All right. Want to get back to this UCF and Boise State game. I don't know if you guys saw this one. By the way, this is where my computer's at this morning. The win probability meter, right? We all familiar with the win probability meter?
Absolutely.
On the ESPN.com, you go to the final score, you look it all up. The win probability meter still shows UCF at 81.5% likelihood of winning the game. Now, how that's possible, I'm not 100% sure. I can't tell you that. All I know is the game went final about 7 hours ago.
Yeah, got a little delay.
And according to ESPN's win probability meter, UCF still very much in control. Well, if that gives you any indicator as to what the game looked like last night from Orlando, that should tell you all you need to know. It was wild now. It was really wild. It was a score-a-thon there in the first, 15, 20 minutes of the game. And it really was kind of a cacophony, if you will, of errors from UCF. They looked awful. I mean, absolutely awful in the first 20 minutes of that football game. Couldn't get anything going. I mean, offense was a mess. They had a really nice opening drive right down the field. Dylan Gabriel throws a horrendous interception.
Oh, boy, it was bad.
I don't know what he was seeing.
It was bad.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, usually I'm always going to stick up for the quarterback.
Absolutely.
Like, you know that.
As you
like,
should.
I see what he saw. Like, but there's sometimes you just can, you really can't justify it at all. You can't spin it in your favor as a quarterback. And I looked at that probably 5 or 6 different times, rewinding, fast forward, rewinding, fast forward, rewinding, fast forward. I still don't know what he thought he saw or where he thought he was going to try to fit that ball in the back right corner of the end zone. I didn't even see one of his receivers in the area. You know, I mean, it's not like,
man,
it would have been dicey. It would have been a ridiculous throw. Like, Santonio Holmes from Ben Roethlisberger in the back right corner of the end zone to win the Super Bowl against Arizona. Like, that kind of throw, and it just didn't happen, didn't materialize. It's intercepted by Tyreek LaBeouf, taken all the way to the house, 100-yard interception return to the house after what was a promising opening drive to the Gus Malzahn era. Well, it didn't get much better from there. Absolutely pounded. I mean, we're talking about a team of grown men, being Boise State, physically imposing their will on the smaller, more athletic UCF. Running guys over, pounding them into submission at the line of scrimmage, inside zone, outside zone, downhill gap trap, getting it to their tight ends out in space, those tight ends running over secondary defenders.
Yeah, it was a massacre.
It literally, the first 20 minutes of the game, it looked like the varsity team was scrimmaging against the JV. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we all remember what that was like, and I'm sure most of us have experienced that. I remember at South Lake, we used to have to play against the varsity once a year, and it looked like that. You know, it looked like when you throw it to the receiver and he truck sticks the middle linebacker, it's like, hang on, that's the receiver, that's the middle linebacker. How is this possible? What are we doing? That's what it looked like. And then things settled down. And they put a drive together there to answer what was the third touchdown drive from Boise State Gabriel start to get into a little bit of a rhythm at this point. They were able to then kind of hold Boise State to a field goal there with 5 minutes remaining in the second quarter. And then I would say, Damian, tell me if you think I'm wrong, the touchdown at the end of half is what changed things.
Yep. That was the exact moment. That was the first thing I thought of.
Because they had, what, a minute 30 left, minute 20 left in that vicinity. They go right down the field.
Execution.
Probably 10, 15 seconds left. And they almost sack Dylan Gabriel in the backfield. He runs around. He rolls to his left. And he throws a strike to Titus Makaya Atimalala.
Good job.
If that's butchered, I apologize. But he throws it to the right front pylon. Makaya Atimalala does an unbelievable job catching it, finding his way into the end zone, and scoring a touchdown with 6 seconds remaining. That made it 24-14 as opposed to 24-7. Looked like Gus was going to settle for the field goal. They ought to try to go for the touchdown, and boy, does it pay off, because they use some of that momentum created at the end of the second quarter, parlay it into 2 third-quarter touchdowns, which they took the lead. And then it was back and forth down the stretch between Boise and UCF. Ultimately, UCF getting the W on the strength of the Isaiah Bowser 6-yard run and putting a bow on it after what was a 75-yard drive in 10 plays, 3 minutes and 47 seconds left on the clock. It was a really impressive performance from Gus. As much as people in this footprint want to beat him up and say how, you know, he doesn't, this offense is archaic. I get it. Don't get me wrong. There are things about his offense that frustrate me at no end. They made the adjustments last night, especially on the defense side of the football. And you got to give credit where credit is due, man. That was really well done by that coaching staff. They were able to collectively gather themselves. They did a much better job against the run in the second half. They did a much better job, tackling in space in the second half. I thought it was an excellent performance from UCF, because that Boise State team is no slouch, man. That's a pretty good group. And UCF didn't have their fastball. Couple turnovers. Not an ideal performance from UCF. It was sloppy at times, but they found a way. And the adjustments they made in the second half were all the difference. They get the win 36-31, and Gus Malzahn is officially 1-0 as the head coach of UCF. Some sad news about a former Alabama player that we'll fill you in on next right here on Mac and Cube in the Morning. Greg McElroy with you here on Mac and Cube in the Morning. I want to tell you about the pros at Wayne's Pest Control. They've proudly been serving Birmingham and communities across Alabama for nearly 50 years with world-class termite and pest control, mosquito prevention, and lawn care services. Now, whether you need a solution for your home or a solution for your business, Wayne's will customize a solution for you. They take great care of my family. I know they'll take great care of you too. And right now there are army worms that are just taking over. There's an infestation here in Alabama, significant as we've ever seen. Some of the warning signs: brown spots that resemble drought conditions, moss flying around the yard, evidence of spots on the ends of the blades of grass, and visible worms. You can actually see the worms in your lawn. They can take down an entire lawn if you don't treat it. So make sure you get it treated by the pros at Wayne's Pest Control. Call 866- Wayne's One. Once again, that's 866-WAYNES-1. Get all your problems solved by the pros at Wayne's Pest Control. Really, really, really heartbreaking story yesterday, man. It hits home for a lot of us. I don't recall Keith McCants as a player. I was, when he was playing in the NFL and at Alabama, I was just a young child. But he passed away yesterday from a suspected drug overdose at the age of 53. And Keith has been a guy that I've been around a little bit. I don't know him really well. To be honest with you, I've spent pretty limited time with him. But some of the things that you've heard about, obviously being in the BSI 5 family, the Bama family, it's heartbreaking what he had to endure, man. I mean, he was a fourth overall pick, excuse me, of the 1990 draft. So, of course, an All-American at the University of Alabama. Career ended just a few years into it, only played 6 years in the league, and unfortunately had a lot of demons. Was arrested several times for possession, drugs, and drug paraphernalia, and it sounds like, according to the articles that I've read, he had a lot of supporters, and unfortunately those demons were just too strong, man. So just say a prayer for Keith, say a prayer for his family. I know I will be, man. Just hard. It's really, really hard and really sad. Someone we, of course, celebrated and enjoyed watching play here, though, at the Capstone, and gone way too early at the age of 53. Never easy to transition off of a story like that, so just keep Keith in your prayers and keep him in your thoughts, and keep his loved ones in your thoughts as well. I want to hit some of the other games from last night. And if you look at some of the games, there were a couple eye-openers. We already talked a little bit about Ohio State-Minnesota. We can document that here again in just a little bit. Other top 25 action. Coastal Carolina getting a pretty significant victory over the Citadel. It was never really all that close. They were up 31-0 at halftime and cruised to the finish line. As they are, I think, going to be a handful again this year. Utah, after what was a really slow start, Utah at one point was down to Weber State. Down, which is
That's
never good.
Never.
Weber State pretty good though, D. I mean, not bad. I mean they're FCS.
The only thing about Weber State I know is Damian Lillard graduated from there. Other than that, I would have never known.
That's a pretty good thing to know.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I knew is that after Jimmy Barnes transferred from Alabama, he transferred to Weber State.
And that's as far as the Weber State knowledge got.
Yeah, that's where my knowledge stops. I believe it's in Utah, maybe. I'm almost 90% sure it is.
Somewhere out west.
But that's about all I got for you. So that was, I guess, a little bit of an eye-opener. Utah, of course, turning the Jets on, though, after what was a brief weather delay, ended up winning the game 40-17. Arizona State took care of business against Southern Utah now 0-2 after what was the beatdown by Arizona State. Ironically enough, Arizona State ranked in the top 25. They did not beat Southern Utah as badly as San Jose State beat Southern Utah. Is that comparable? I'll let you decide. San Jose State, however, is getting 14.5 points against USC this weekend. So if that's any indicator as to where I think that game is going, I happen to think that San Jose State is pretty good. And if they played head-to-head, not saying you could say, well, this team beat this team, so this team would beat this team. No, we're not going to create that narrative. But all I'm saying is San Jose State was more convincing in defeating Southern Utah than Arizona State. Just something to keep in mind as we get ready to head to the weekend. Speaking of the weekend, talking about some action, we'll have Chris the Bear Felica join us here in about 6 minutes. We'll talk some of these games. One of the games he liked, by the way, last week, NC State smoked South Florida. He liked NC State. They were laying 19.5, and that game really was never competitive. NC State, I think, has a chance to be pretty good. Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying NC State's going to make the playoff. All I'm saying is they play at Mississippi State in 8 days. A couple extra days rest. They go to Starkville. That'll be a tough game for the Bulldogs. And they host Clemson on September 25th. So I think it's a dangerous team. And if they can play defense and rush the passer like they were able to do last night, they might cause some problems, not just for Mississippi State, but for the Clemson Tigers, who will head to Raleigh at Carter-Finley Stadium at the end of the month. And then the final game of significance last night, how about UC Davis knocking off Tulsa? 19-17. That's an FCS team over a team that finished number 2 in the American Athletic Conference. Pretty significant there. App State took care of ECU. Tennessee smoked Bowling Green. Western Kentucky beat UT Martin. Mexico beat Houston Baptist. Eastern Washington beat UNLV, another FCS over FBS opponent, and FIU beat Long Island University. We'll play the numbers here with Chris the Bear Felica when we return right here on Jocks 94.5 and Mac and Cube in the morning.